VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 454, recorded on January 25th, 2017. Podcast and the 287th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am Jonah Falcon.
I am TJ Denzer.
And I am Scott Dirk.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry. We took a week off last week because I was not in New York. I was in LA and I wasn't going to lug around a laptop to do a podcast really awkwardly that I wouldn't be able to edit anyway. So we took the week off, which was actually a kind of unfortunate time off because between our podcast and this podcast, the Switch was revealed, and I can already tell Scott's ears things are coming out of Scott's ears, and he has a frothy mouth because it seems like Nintendo decided to do everything wrong.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. I mean, Nintendo seems to be constantly disappointing me and just making me sad.
Well, before we get into that, that's actually one of the items. So let's spoiler alert. We're going to talk about that a little bit.
Anyways.
Did both of you watch Nintendo's press conference? I think it was.
Yes. Wait. Yes. The reveal or the press conference? Something.
Well,
afterwards?
Both. Well, both. I mean, it was so Japanese, it's not even funny. I mean, at some point they had to get out a girl in a school outfit. It was that Japanese. Even though it was disturbing, it was still a girl in a. For those who don't know, one of the things they showed was that stupid game with the extendable arms. So what happens is you had two real people having CGI floppy arms like you'd find in one of those. They would have those floppy arms that you see in one of those car dealerships, you know, because of that punching game, whatever it is. So
is it the 1-2-3 Switch thing?
No, it's actually just called Arms.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
No, Switch 1-2 was actually kind of stupider, but we're going to get to that later. I mean, what was your overall impression? I mean, one thing about Nintendo, say what you want, at least they think video games are supposed to be fun.
Yeah.
They might come through, but at least they, you know, because when you have Microsoft and PlayStation and Activision and EA, it's always like, this is hardcore. This is deep and mysterious and really badass. Nintendo's, this is flowers and fluffy puppies. Which I miss, you know, because, you know, I do like lighthearted. One of my favorite games that I'm playing right now is Plants vs. Zombies 2. Garden Warfare 2. It's like, you don't have to have everything be bloody.
Make your girl.
Scott, what did you like during the Switch presentation?
Oh, I liked, I mostly just watched the video game trailers to see what each game looked like. So I liked that they had that. Show us what limited games they're giving us.
Well, we're not going to get into that, but besides Legend of Zelda, was there anything that you were looking forward to?
Oh, yeah, Mario Odyssey looks good. I like what they did with the Mario Odyssey. Well, I didn't think of it as Sonic. I don't know why people keep saying
he
that.
He did a Sonic role! It's like Sonic Adventure. You know, a lot of people are expecting him to be running on a pier while an orca is trying to get him from behind.
I don't know. It didn't seem like Sonic to me.
You didn't like Splatoon? Or at least Splatoon sequel?
I don't know. It just didn't look like Sonic to me. But if I guess people see it, they see it. But like I liked that the hat was different, you know, it was interesting. He threw it forward as a weapon and he also used it as a platform. It looked neat, you know, it looked different. Like we were talking about last week, Nintendo needs to do things differently with some of these games and make them not so, like the previous ones in their franchises.
How about you, TJ?
I think that the Switch is going to have a good time when it comes to the summer. I don't know about the early running, but a lot of, like, when you look at it, a lot of the stuff that they announced, like, okay, so 1-2 Switch and Zelda are going to be the launch games, and that seems to be about it.
And then some of that.
You know, the
in March, it's like maybe a couple of games. The big bulk of the lineup that they showed off doesn't make it until like late spring, early summer.
Okay, but we're talking about the things we like. We'll get to the things that Nintendo did a misstep on later.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying is that when a lot of the stuff that they were showing off for the summer, it looks like stuff that I would be interested in. ARMS looks strange, but it also reminded me of Punch-Out. Like a competitive punch out that you might play with your friend. And that seems like sort of an interesting idea. I don't know how I feel about motion controls on a punch out game. Cause I've done that before and I don't really enjoy it.
Did they use the Wiimotes for punch out on the Wii?
They did. You could control it with the nunchuck and the Wiimote and it was okay. And, you know, I mean, most of the games did look like lighthearted and fun. I think you're right. And
Arthur Geese did say he liked the branding. I mean, it was a lot better branding than the Wii U. Talking about the Switch box and the Switch logo and all that stuff. But I don't know.
It's who's that guy? I think it's interesting, but they're also going for like the niche crowd with stuff like No More Heroes.
Yeah, no, Hisuda came out and said we might have No More Heroes. None of these people were very okay. We're going to talk about this later, okay? But I will say before you say that, it's like everybody came out and said the Switch looks nice. All these speakers came up and said, "Yeah, we're going to make something for the Switch," and you could hear the question in their voices. It's like, "Yeah, I mean, Activision is coming out with one game, and that's Skylander. Mm-hmm. That's it." So we're going to go straight to what have you been playing, Scott?
Mostly Minecraft and Animal Crossing. I've been kind of saving my money up right now, you know, to pay some property taxes and stuff. And then eventually I'm going to get that Dragon's Quest Builders. So I'm looking forward to playing that eventually.
How about you, TJ?
I settled into Resident Evil 7 today.
Oh, yes. and it's getting universally rave reviews.
Yeah, it's good. You know,
let's just say Resident Evil is doing what Silent Hill is supposed to be doing.
Considering what the world is like right now, getting lost in a house full of backwoods psychopaths felt therapeutic. but to be honest, though, it has a lot of it is very much a return to form in Resident Evil style.
Here's the thing. That's funny because I thought it was return to form to Silent Hill style.
No, it's completely Resident Evil style, like straight up item conservation, puzzle solving. The item boxes return. You save it like an old school, one of those little tape deck recorders, which is just like the typewriter for me, and I love that. But, It's just exploring this big house that's just full of death and terror, and it's,
you know, a lot of people were concerned that it was going first person, but aside from being in first person, it's still the same as Resident Evil in that you really can't turn around quickly. You have to turn around slowly. You're not allowed to have quick movements.
The 180 turn made a comeback, which I'm happy about. Press backwards and hold circle, and you make a quick turn to the back of you. Which
what I'm
was
saying
great
is when you
Resident Evil 3.
When you're turning around, you know, when you're turning and you're walking, you can't really. It's not like a shooter in which you just run fast. No, you can whip around 180, but you can't turn fast. You know, it's like
And most of the creatures run faster than you.
Well, yeah, definitely.
That's why I like mouse and keyboard.
But another great thing about it is.
It's scary. Let's start off right now. It's scary.
Yeah. Well, for one thing, you never feel overpowered like you did in Resident Evil 4, 5, or 6.
Well, that's a part of being scared. I mean, the thing about horror is you're vulnerable. That's horror in all forms. Yeah. You feel vulnerable. That's if you don't feel vulnerable, you're playing Doom.
Yeah. And I mean, you say Silent Hill, but I think the easier parallel for this, like the way the control style works in the first person, is Alien Isolation.
I was thinking about Alone in the Dark, the first one.
Alien Isolation is the easy parallel for this because it's the same idea. You're never overpowered. You don't have strong weapons, and you're just trying to sneak around and survive. And Alien Isolation wasn't the best game, but it did pull off horror quite well.
But here's the thing. I'd rather be in The Last House on the Left than in Alien, because I don't mean in real life, but I mean playing as horror game, because the familiar is scary. I mean, everybody's still talking about how scary that house was in Condemned.
Mm-hmm.
You know, way back when. I think in 2006, 2005? It was one of the first Xbox 360 games. But yeah, I mean, it was scary because you were in a house alone with a psychopath. Here you're in a house alone with a bunch of psychopaths.
I could go on forever about it, but it is very much a return to style for Resident Evil. If they continue to do it like this, then I think Capcom can get back on track with that series.
The thing is, they also subtitled it Biohazard, which is what the game is called in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
Is it getting back to roots, or is it sort of like doing something new?
You know, I'm hearing a lot of this idea of like an entry point for both new gamers and old school fans, and I would say that that's something that fits Resident Evil 7. It's got a lot of interesting elements that people can jump into if they've never jumped into a Resident Evil game before, but it also has a ton of nods to the original ideas, like the greener, the herb mixing, the ammo conservation, the inventory slots, and figuring out what you want to take with you and what you want to put in the box for later. I think that's something that's awesome for, like, that's what they were trying to do with Resident Evil 6, but instead of just, like, making it into one game, they made it into three stupid games.
Then you had Umbrella Corps, and...
yeah, I think pulling it all together into one cohesive idea was the right choice.
Well, limiting it to one location allows you to focus more. Also, the player will get familiar with that one location, so they become instantly at home and also less secure at the same time. So, are you a completionist? Did you go through every nook and cranny?
Oh, I just started today, so I've still got a ways to go.
Are you the sort of person who's going to go through every nook and cranny?
Oh, I definitely will. There's secret items to be found, and there's these little consumables called. Well, they're a drug that allows you to spot items like where they are through walls. So that's a nice little cheat item, but you only get like a very limited supply of those, obviously, and they only work for a short duration.
I mean, the demo itself was good enough. I mean, I was thinking if the game is half as good as the demo, then it's going to be smooth sailing for it.
Yeah, Resident Evil is a must-buy for any horror fan, I'd say. Whether you're a Resident Evil fan or not, this is the one.
You know, we had a question of the week a couple of weeks ago, and what game would you play that's not even in the genre that you enjoy? And maybe this is the survival horror game that people who are not normally into that kind of game will get into. As for me, I played Halo 5, and I made a startling discovery. I don't like Warzone, and I don't like Warzone Firefight. And the reason for that is, if I wanted to play Battlefield, I'd buy Battlefield. You know? I remember playing Halo multiplayer when you were slow, and there were no side dashes, there were no armor abilities. It's just you were slow, and you had to aim good or else you die.
Hmm.
You know, here it's just exploit, and I found myself not liking it. Firefight is a mess because when I play Firefight, I like a smaller location. If you ever played Firefight on Reach or ODST, I mean, it's very claustrophobic. You know, when you have Gruntpocalypse, there's nothing like that. Mm-hmm. I also played Mysterium, which is the video game adaptation of the board game. Have you ever heard of it?
No, I haven't. What is it?
You ever heard of Dixit?
No.
Okay, so it's a game in which one player is a ghost, and sending these impressionistic cards to players to help them find the killer. So it's like Clue in that you have a who did it, with what, and where, right? Mm-hmm. But the card that you may have you know, it's like it's in the bedroom with all these toys around there, and you might find a card that sort of hints at it. And you may think, well, people will get this easily, but then you'll get frustrated that they completely mistranslate what you're trying to tell them. Because you cannot talk, you cannot look at them, you cannot do anything. It's kind of easy on a computer. As a face-to-face board game, it's really fun. And as a computer game, against a computer, it's less fun because, for one thing, you're literally looking for things on the card to match, you know. Because here's the thing, computers don't have imaginations, you know. Like if you have a pool and you have a picture of a ship in a bottle, you could use that because people say, okay, ship, okay, on the water. Oh, this place has a pool in it. It might match. The computer can't think that way.
Mm-hmm.
When you're playing with other people, it's better, but there's something about this game in particular, not having other people to converse with, you know. I mean, there is a chat line, you know, which you can talk to other people. But otherwise, you know, it's a lessened experience. I mean, if I were to review it right now, I'd give it a 7 out of 10. The cards are really beautiful, but then again, they're taken directly from the game itself. But, you know, I mean, if you ever see Mysterium on the shelf, go ahead and buy it, get some friends, play it, and you'll have a ball. Otherwise, if you get this game, oh, that's the one thing as well. The matchmaking stinks.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very hard to find even a single game because not many people are buying it. And you have to create a room that people can find. It's like very few people playing it. And it's disappointing because it's the sort of game in which you want a lot of people, you know, just to argue amongst each other about what the cards you gave them mean, that sort of stuff, you know, the debate. And if you're the ghost, you have to mentally slap your forehead as people completely botch what you're trying to tell them. And after the game, you want to explode. You idiots! That's not what I meant! Don't you get it? It's green. Her shirt is green. Didn't you make that connection? So, yeah. Anyways, this is one of the rare times. We haven't done this in a very long while. Over a year, in fact. We have a gaming flashback. And Scott, why don't you... not Scott, I mean TJ. Why don't you do the gaming flashback? And, you know, it's a pity that Paul isn't here because this was one of his favorite MMOs ever, if not his.
City of Heroes. City of Heroes was a massively multiplayer online role-playing game developed by Cryptic Studios and published by NCSoft. The game was launched in North America on April 27th, 2004, and in Europe by NCSoft Europe on February 4th, 2005, with English, German, and French servers. 23 free major updates for City of Heroes were released before its shutdown. The final live update, Where Shadows Lie, was released on May 31, 2012. On August 31, 2012, NCSoft terminated its Paragon Studios development team, ending all production on City of Heroes with the last day of services on November 30, 2012. On October 31, 2005, the game's first sequel, City of Villains, or COV, was launched, allowing players to play as supervillains. The standalone expansion pack did not require City of Heroes to run, but if the user had both games, content was added to the City of Heroes side of the game to play. On July 16, 2008, NCSoft merged the two games together. Thus, a player who owned City of Heroes could now play City of Villains and vice versa. Prior to this, a purchase was required to access either game's content, but they were linked by one account and subscription free.
Fee.
The city.
Not or, subscription fee.
Sorry, but they were linked by one account and subscription fee. The City of Heroes Going Rogues expansion release was announced on May 11, 2009. This part of the game was centered on an alternate city of Praetoria and featured a new alignment system allowing players to shift allegiances between heroes and villains, giving characters access to both Paragon City of Heroes and the Rogue Isles of City of Villains. Paragon Studios described this as, quote, exploring the shades of gray that lay between heroes and villains. Going Rogue was released on August 17, 2010. On June 20th, 2011, Paragon Studios announced that they were going to switch to a hybrid subscription model called City of Heroes Freedom, adding in a free-to-play game model. Special models for former subscribers would be termed premium players, and current subscribers would become VIP players, who would gain access to all of the content and the various upcoming game updates. The development team continually expanded City of Heroes with free downloadable patches and updates, as well as free game expansions dubbed Issues. All issues were made available to both City of Heroes and, as of Issue 6, City of Villains titles throughout the lifespan of the game, improving features in both games with each release. Issue 14, for example, added the Mission Architect feature that allowed players to publish and play custom mission arcs.
Yeah. They actually had a Death of the Game, City of Heroes, on YouTube, and this inspired me to do. We hadn't done a gaming flashback in a long while, and I played City of Heroes, and the biggest attraction, of course, to that game was the massive amount of costumes that you could create. Mm-hmm. One of the things that everybody loved to do was have fashion shows on the steps of the Freedom Building. It's like people would line up and show off what they made with their their costumes. It was great, you know. It was freedom of expression, and also this was one of the rare cases in which the dev team listened to people and gave them a lot of content for free, and never shirked. You know, they were they had number 24 before NCSoft canceled it. Why was it canceled? Even though it was a successful MMO that was making a little bit of money. Well, there was a Korean version that was going to be released of the game, but no one liked it there, so it never launched there. And NCSoft is a Korean company, and they like their games to be popular in their own country. And City of Heroes may have been making money, but it wasn't making enough money. And they had several big games coming out, one of which was Guild Wars 2. Another one was Blade and Soul. You know, it's really disappointing. And I know that one of the funny things is that they were going to sell the MMO to someone else, but they decided not to. And then the player started sending the executives of the company cakes and donuts and flowers.
There's two things that upset me about this story. One, and we've talked about this before, but the whole when a game gets like this gets canceled and it's like online only, nobody's ever going to be able to play it. You know, like when TJ was describing it, I actually felt like, you know, maybe this would be a fun game to play, but I can't play it because it's gone. You know, and then the other part is the making money but not enough money bullshit. I hate that kind of crap. That's what killed the adventure game genre back in the early 90s. You know, it was like, oh, well, it's making money, but it's not making millions of dollars of money, so we don't want it anymore. And that's just crap.
The other thing is that, you know, there was also a petition to NCSoft to let them run their own servers, you know. Well, the fan servers, they didn't go for that either. They just wanted to kill it because they couldn't. Here's the thing: if they sold to another company and made money, they would have given up a property that was making money. So they didn't want to give that away. So there was a Kickstarter for something called City of Titans, which was a fan made version. That was a couple of years ago. They made $1 million of their $600,000, and they have some servers, you know, and they're still going forward. It's still there, you know. It's not quite there yet. And you know, I doubt it'll ever amount to anything, but it showed how much people wanted to have City of Heroes. You know, I beta tested Champions Online, which was done by the original developers of City of Heroes, Cryptic Studios, and it didn't feel the same. It really did not feel the same as City of Heroes. It felt like you know how bagels, real bagels, are hard and crispy, and you know when you bake them there. The Champions Online bagels felt light and doughy and didn't feel quite right.
You know? I like light and doughy.
That's just bread with a hole in it. You know. But anyways, Well, that aside, though, there are no superhero MMOs.
Well, that's not entirely true, isn't DC Universe Online?
I forgot about that. But you know, it isn't the same. It isn't the same.
I know.
I mean, let me put it this way.
Given the popularity of superhero movies lately, you think there would be an MMO or something more.
That's true. You know, it always makes me wonder how much they influenced, this game influenced. Oh, yeah, and Marvel sued them because players had the capability to make Marvel characters. And it failed immediately because two things. One, you can't sue a paper company for something that people write on it. 2, the City of Heroes already had this thing in which they said if you violate copyrights, you're going to take it down. So that was a frivolous lawsuit, and Marvel even admitted it. It was sort of like they're protecting their brand by doing a frivolous lawsuit. You know, because you have to sometimes you have to do that, just let people know don't copy our stuff. Notice DC didn't bother.
Mm-hmm.
Which reminds me also, Cryptic Studios, before they made Champions Online, they were going to do a Marvel's MMO, a Marvel Comics MMO, if you remember. It was going to be exclusive to the Xbox 360 and PC. It never happened. It became Champions Online. They bought the entire IP of Champions Online. Then they sold it back to Steve Jackson Games. So, yeah, a lot of good times playing that. I remember my character. My character was a mentalist. He manipulated things with his mind, and he could fly. And I gave him this sort of like black suit with dark purple lines all over crisscrossing it, so it looked mystic with a star in the middle, and his own cape, you know. And I really enjoyed that. And that's the other thing, also, what really hurt a lot of City of Heroes players. They got really, really attached to their superheroes, the ones they created mm-hmm. themselves. They got really attached to it, you know. And now they can't access them anymore, which is a shame.
Yeah, I mean, I can't remember hearing bad things about the City of Heroes, City of Villains MMO. Like, it always seemed like one of those things that I wouldn't play it because it had a subscription fee, and I was always against that stuff. But
well, it didn't at some point. It went free to play or freemium. Actually, you know, the freemium model that it did was what a lot of other MMOs copied. I mean, it does what now Star Wars The Old Republic does. If you're a new player, there's some limitations. If you're a former subscriber, they treat you like they give you content. And if you're a subscriber, they treat you as a VIP. You know, that's what freemium models. They were the first to do that, mm-hmm. that tier. Or was it Lord of the Rings Online? We got to do Lords of the Ring Online sometime. I mean, in terms of, it's still out there, by the way.
My point being, though, that I don't think I really ever heard bad stuff about City of Heroes and City of Villains. It was always usually glowing reviews and stuff. And it is one of those things that the way I am now, if I could go back and slap myself and say, play this, you idiot, I would. But
you know, if Paul were here, he would be gushing about how much he loved that game right now.
Yeah, I remember him talking about it, how he liked dressing up his favorite character.
Well, here's the thing. The biggest thing about Paul, the very center of his being, is freedom of expression. And that game was definitely the ultimate freedom of expression. He loved – it was dress-up doll time, you know, for boys and girls. I mean, there was – that. Oh, that's another thing. This MMO had a huge female – what's it called? Subscribership. Huge.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, I never engaged in one of those costume parties, but I wish I did. anyway, City of Heroes. I'm going to look up City of Titans and see what's going on with it. Because it's a noble effort. It has its own website, and it's been updated recently. It's a noble update. It's a noble idea, but like I said, it's something that's going to be very hard for them to get off the ground. Because one of the things about an MMO, as Kurt Schilling will tell you, is it takes a lot of money. Especially just for servers. Scott, you were about to say?
Yeah. I hope City of Titans has better luck, because, I mean, it seems like there is a demand for it. And, like you said, it takes a lot of money, so they, I don't know.
I remember. I remember. We need more games like Aeon, which is another game that Cryptic Studios favored over City of Heroes. I mean, Aeon. I think it's still going too, even though it really. I don't know. There are people who like that game. I'm not going to trash it. Anyways, we're going to go on to game news. And now we only have really one game news item, but it's enough. So the five biggest problems with the Nintendo Switch, this comes to us from Forbes, and after each one we can talk about it. First of all, it's pricey, especially when you take accessories into account. The Nintendo Switch isn't the most expensive console on the market, and at $299 it's not a bad deal. But once you start to tack on accessories, the console becomes quite a lot pricier. Want to add a charging Joy-Con grip? That's $30. How about a Pro Controller? That's $70. How about another pair of Joy-Cons? That's $80. Or if you just want one of those tiny little Joy-Cons, $50. And someone calculated if you want to have... Oh, and that's the other thing. The Switch doesn't come with any games. So now you have to buy Zelda along with it. So someone they calculated a joystick. If you want to have a Switch, extra pair of controllers, memory card, Joy-Con, the charger, the Joy-Con, and a game, it's going to cost you almost $600. So you can just both go after that right now. I mean, here's the thing. A lot of people thought it was going to be $250, and I didn't think it was going to be, because the console probably costs a lot to make with a Tegra chip. But
I was hoping for that $250 price point as well.
Because the Xbox One net right now you can get it for $225. That's probably what they're comparing it to. TJ? Go ahead, Scott.
I got the PlayStation 4, I think Slim, with Uncharted 4 was the bundle, and I got it for $250. So it's like Nintendo really needs to compete with they're late out of the gate, it feels like, with this Switch, and they need to catch up to the Xbox and the PlayStation 4, and just very little reason to fork over $300 and then all those accessories. It's very detrimental to wanting to buy this thing.
Yeah, but when you talk about PS4 bundle as it is now, did you get that over the holidays, or was it on sale, or was that just
full price? It was on the holidays.
Oh, and here's a question. Sale. Was it a Pro, or was it just regular PS4?
Regular.
Okay.
See, and that's what I'm saying, is that we're talking about the difference between the Switch at launch and the PS4 as it is now.
See, but the problem is that the Switch is going to be locked at 1080p on TV and 720 when you're carrying it around. Meanwhile, the PlayStation Pro is going to be 4K, is 4K, or 4K, and the current Microsoft Xbox One S can go in 4K. So it's still behind, and when you actually watch Legend of Zelda, there's no anti-aliasing,
mm-hmm.
which is shocking. Because they have to, they're at 1080p, and they want to get, I guess they have to do 60 frames. I think it's 60, I don't know. But in order for that, with the hardware they're using, they have to make sacrifices. And here's the thing. Zelda still has a timeless look that makes it look pretty, even if it's like 32-bit. But it's still not going to be capable of doing what a current-gen model is going to be.
Right. And there's probably technology in this list, right? Specs? But
there's technology, but it's the wrong kind of technology. We'll move forward. Not enough games at launch.
Before we move forward, okay. I was going to say, even like not being completely on par with everything else maybe right now, it's still the fourth least expensive console in history if you adjust for inflation.
That's like saying your car is the cheapest car, except you have to buy tires and gas and a rear view mirror and the ignition and a steering wheel.
Right, but I am also saying that you get what you pay for.
Yes. Not enough games at launch and nothing packed in. Time and again, video game consoles launch with too few games at launch. Nintendo is far from the guilty party in this regard, but they were hoping that Nintendo would give a stronger launch title than the Wii U. You have Legend of Zelda, and you have Switch 1-2 Switch. And, oh, by the way, the Shigeru Miyamoto parody Twitter account said that that was not only the name of the game, but also the launch lineup, Switch 1-2, or 1-2 Switch. and here's the other thing. 1-2 Switch is not a $50 game. It's a $5 game.
It looks like the equivalent of Wii U Sports Resort. And I mean,
it's not even that. It's not even Wii U Sports Resort. It is worse than that. At least Wii U Sports Resort, it made sense. You can play tennis. You can play, And Wii U Sports Resort, by the way, was packed with a lot of original Wiis. This is garbage. Oh, you can tell how many balls are in the controller because of the HD rumble. HD rumble, I mean, okay, it's nifty, but how many games are going to require that? Is there a demand to have HD Rumble?
Yeah, I have no desire to buy that 1-2 Switch. I thought that was going to be bundled with the Switch at least, but it just looks like a gimmick that you'd get tired of real quickly.
Oh, after 5 minutes. It is a $50 game, though.
That is, like, I would have thought that would have been a bundle title. It has everything about its look and being is a bundle title.
It's like
it's a tech demo.
It's a tech demo. It shows you what your HD Rumble can do. It shows you what, you know, all the features that you can do. By the way, they got rid of Miiverse. Is that true?
I'm not sure.
I think because Jim Sterling was complaining about that they got rid of the Miiverse, which was one of the best things he thought about the Wii was the Miiverse.
Yeah, it was a great community app. I liked it. It was very like lighthearted and fun to look at.
Yeah, it was. They did get rid of it. They got rid of it. So they're going backwards. I don't know if this article talks about the online support. No, they don't. We're going to talk about that. They do. Okay. And here's the thing. So the Super Mario Odyssey, the game that you're loving, Scott, it's not going to come out until late 2017.
Yeah, it was a holiday title.
The Switch is coming out in March. And, you know, this is, what's it called? Sony sold, they mentioned VR Worlds, that Sony decided to sell it, and you know how much of a crap fest that was. They should have been bundled to show you this is what your virtual reality headset can do. Strange decisions. It's almost like Microsoft forcing people to buy Kinect with their Xbox One.
Yeah. Zelda is a great launch title. But
We hope. Now, here's the thing. We haven't actually played it. We've seen a lot of streams from Nintendo things. You know, it's a given that it has to be great. I mean, Super Mario World was a bundle in with the Nintendo 64, right?
Okay, let me put it this way. Zelda is a great launch title in theory. It's a strong gate opener. But if it's the only game you have, are you willing to play it for 3 months until the rest of the flock comes running?
Well, guess what? You're in luck, because there aren't going to be many Switches available anyway.
Oh, yeah, that's the other thing. Inflate false demand. That's, you know, this feels crappy. It's a very short library, and I'm just going to have to wait before getting this Switch. It's not going to be this year, and might not even be next year.
Well, here's the thing, Scott. People, you're not the only person, you know, who rolled their eyes at Nintendo saying, well, we're not going to have that much, because they already saw the mini NES thing, which, remember, Jim Sterling talked about his local Target having 3, and then Nintendo sent another shipment of 2, you know. People are not going to get hooked on your console, because they've already been burned once by the Wii, and then we saw how they reacted to the Wii U. You know, you're not. It's like Jack Tretton saying, oh, well, we could sell PS3s even if we never released a game for it because of the DVD player. I mean, because of the Blu-ray player. Well, guess what? People may not buy your shit if it's not available, and they may not care.
It'll
be interesting to see.
That's definitely going to happen.
It's going to be interesting to see eBay around that time, you know, and see what the Switches are going for on eBay. Because that's usually the mark of how much a system is wanted. I mean, they had PS3s on eBay. No one bought them. There were Wii's on eBay. People snatched them for $500, $600,
$700. Ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. And that is a far too common trend out of Nintendo, and I'm not sure if it's just that they don't have the money to put up for the costs of production, or if they're just legitimately, legitimately believe that creating artificial shortage is a good idea for a business model.
Well, as Scott said, you know, Nintendo thinks of itself as a toy company, not as an electronics manufacturer. Electronics, you want to get as many out there as possible, 3D TVs, consoles, whatever have you, you know, radios, MP3 players, iPods. Toys, you want to be scarce, like a Furby or a Power Ranger, you know. Nintendo's of the idea that it's still a toy company. And it worked for them before with the Wii. And they still think it's going to work again. Because people couldn't find a Wii, they wanted a Wii.
Yeah. It's ridiculous. And you know what? I'm interested enough that come summer, I'll probably be looking to get it. But no, not at launch. That's too long to wait for another good game to come out.
It's going to be a while. I want to see also what they do with the Virtual Console. And I really don't like the idea of repeatedly buying the same game over and over again just because it's on a new console. I really dislike that.
Yeah, we're not. We haven't gotten to that part yet.
They didn't talk about that at all. They didn't talk
we
about Virtual
Console. We haven't talked about that yet. So, number three, shoddy's third-party support in 2017. Now, I remember you, Scott, saying, well, they have all these people committed to the Switch. Look at all this list. And I told you, they always have those lists for every console ever released. And it's clean to Gizmondo.
That's not quite how I phrased that. It was more like, why is Autodesk on here? What would they make for this? But if it's just a placeholder that may not even do anything, then yeah.
So it may be impossible for Nintendo to rekindle strong third-party support for any of its systems at this point. Nintendo marches to the beat of its own drum, and unfortunately that means the company's consoles rely most heavily on Nintendo's own IPs. Unfortunately, like we already said, there's one game coming out at launch. I'm not calling 1-2 Switch a game. I refuse to. They have one game released, and that's Zelda, and that's it. So it's remarkable to see Skyrim on the Switch, but that's still half a decade old at this point. And, oh, by the way, they're selling Skyrim for $60 on the Switch. Who's going to pay for Skyrim, which is a five. It was released November 11, 11/11, right? So it'd be 5 years and a couple of months. It's just over 5 years old. Who's going to pay $60 for that on a new console when they already have it on every single console and PC? Plus, you can get it for you have the enhanced edition, which includes all of the expansions, and also, oh, guess what? Skyrim on the Switch is not going to have user content. Whoops.
Yeah, I mean the only plus to the the only thing that I could possibly say legitimizes Skyrim in any way on the Switch for what it is that I could never put Skyrim in my pocket and take it with me wherever I went, so that's something, but that's still not worth $60.
And also, they also said battery life will be between 2 and 6 hours. Really? Well, they said battery life for Zelda will be about 3 hours, which I interpret to mean 2 hours, because they always exaggerate that crap. Mm-hmm. So do you want to walk around with Skyrim for 2 hours? Or even less, because it's so graphic intensive. We saw the graphics of Skyrim, by the way. It is like a mid-tier PC from 2011.
Yeah.
You know. And, yeah, you can play Skyrim, but, yeah, so what? I mean, you know, here's the thing. If they had multiplayer Skyrim, then maybe it might be interesting. But, I don't know. Scott, would you want to walk around playing Skyrim?
No, I like sitting at my computer with mouse and keyboard, and I already own it, so there's no point buying it yet again. And it's $40 the special edition is $40 on Steam, so again, why would I bother buying it on Switch? It's like kind of pointless. Everybody that wants the game has the game now.
And TJ, you know, the thing is that, yeah, you have Skyrim already. Do you really want to go through all that again on a small screen? Here's the thing. Is something like Skyrim good as a portable? I've always said this, you know, the kind of games that I want on a portable console are games that are quick and easy, like the CGG I'm playing right now, Animation Takedown. I pop it in, I play some matches, and boom, I'm done.
I'm not the best person to ask about that because I buy like old Nintendo games on my DS all the time. And when the original DS came out and they put port of the first Resident Evil on it, I went and bought that because I liked the idea of being able to carry that around. I would be kind of the person that would say, yeah, I wouldn't mind being able to carry Skyrim around with me wherever I went. I wouldn't pay $60 for it, but I would enjoy the concept.
Okay, here's the real sticking point right now. Ready? Paid online service is a bad idea for Nintendo. Well, I would disagree with that. It would be a good idea, if they knew how to do it. So mm-hmm. here's the thing. I'm going to condense this really quickly. They do have their version of Xbox Live / PSN Plus. You need it to play online. Fine. You have to have things that you can play online. I mean, but what online games do they have to play? Splatoon? I mean, Splatoon 2? That's all. And it's not even going to be a launch title. But you know how Microsoft gives away games and gives away discounts, and PSN gives away games. Although with Microsoft's Xbox Live, I don't think you lose the games if you stop doing Live. I think it's yours forever. On PSN, I believe you lose access to the game when you get off PlayStation Plus. Well, Nintendo's going to one-up that douchebaggery by letting you rent a ROM from an NES or SNES game for a month. That's it. They're going to let you rent a ROM.
Yeah.
It's just... I feel like they just have no idea what they're doing, and they're just trying to jump onto this online thing so late in the game, and they just... They're complete amateurs about it, and it feels like... Yeah, it feels like the toy maker is just really putting it to you, and you have no idea. They have no idea how to treat people with this digital content. And, you know, I mean, like, some of these fan bases played these games for decades now, okay. You know.
I'm going to tell you something. Here's the thing.
They want
to
play Super Mario 3 and shouldn't be charged like two or three times just to play it.
There's one or two things they could have done. Number one, they still haven't said how much this service is going to be. If it's over $5, then it's a ripoff. Even then, it's a ripoff, because you wouldn't pay $5 to play Mappy, would you? No. If they did a $30 $60 a year for one of two things. One, they could release 5 old Nintendo and NES games a week, and they would not run out. That they have a huge, 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 huge library, you know? Or they could do what Marvel does with their comic books. You pay the subscription fee, you can play any one of our games in our history, one at a time, on your system. Like Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
Scott, wouldn't you go for that? Yeah, just, you know, yeah. Oh, I feel like a Mother 3 right now, so I'm going to play that for like a couple of weeks with my
Dallas
subscription.
Or Battle of Olympus.
Or Chrono Trigger, or whatever.
Games that I never got to play.
I mean, I'm just saying, you know, sort of like Netflix for your Switch. That people would buy into, but no, they're gonna let you try out a ROM, and if you like, you can buy it. No, you know, here's the thing about emulators. I am guilty of using emulators. I know technically it's illegal. I don't emulate anything that's still alive. I mean, arcade ROMs. Who are playing any arcade games anymore? No one. I don't care about that. But these ROMs are freely available, and people are going to do that instead of do your shitty service. You know? Yeah. And not because they don't want to pay. Well, that's a part of it. Because it's easier. If you're going to do an online subscription, you have to make it easy. And that was the big problem with the Nintendo eStore, is that it is a hassle to do anything with. I mean, you want to buy something from Microsoft, boom, you find the game, you find the game page, boom, you can buy it, that's it. Same thing with Sony and PlayStation 4. You have to go through page after page after page after page on a shitty little what's called interface with Nintendo. That's not how you get people to buy stuff. Maybe they're looking at iTunes and the Play Store and saying that's the way to do it. Hint: no, it isn't, because they're both services suck. Oh, by the way,
they need a search.
Go ahead, Scott.
They need a search feature. That's what they need, a search feature. I thought they did actually have a search feature.
They do on the 3DS. I don't know if they have one on Wii.
Here's something I'm going to discuss that has nothing to do with the Switch right now, but is related. And that is Steam is a crap store now. Did you know that 80% of every single game on that server, on Steam, 80% of all the games on Steam were released in the past 3 years? 40% in 2016 alone. Let that sink in. 40% of the games on Steam's library right now were made this year, because Valve has absolutely no quality control at all. You can have the crappiest bullshit games, and of course I'm getting this from Jimquisition because I did not know the stats until now. You know, they have games that are asset flip games, you know, in which people just take assets from all sorts of games and just plop them out there. And you have these games that you'd be embarrassed to say that you made.
Shovelware.
Not even shovelware is premium gaming compared to these games. They're not even tested. They're absolutely broken, less than demos that break as soon as that are easily broken. They are not even shovelware. They're not even garbageware.
Well, in that case, they're shovelware like E.T., where you shovel them into a landfill and bury them forever.
Yeah, well,
people need to be very careful about buying these games and not getting the money over to crapware.
Well, here's the thing, Scott. It isn't the fact that they're there and people are buying them. People aren't buying them. But what happens to your store when people try to find for stuff like the newest games that are released? All you have are these shit games that you're never going to buy. Literal shit games that you're never going to buy. And all the games that are hidden in this pile of crap. You know, the games that you want to play, if they're not AAA and they're not on the front page, you know, like, buy The Witcher 3, Wild Hunt. You know, if it's not that, you can't find it.
Yeah, and I mean, in that case, it takes really good word of mouth and getting the word out to good people. Like, Owlboy is not that big of a game, but the quality speaks for itself, and people talk it up.
But remember when people said, oh, wow, the game's on Steam, it's good. And not anymore. 80% of the games, 2014, 2015, 2016, 80% of those games are on Steam right now. 80% of the Steam library is in the past 3 years.
You do make a good point there. I've never actually gone to Steam to see what they had going on and actually like researched it there. I usually find my games outside of Steam and then just buy it there because it's convenient.
And this is what's strangling indie gamer, any platform, any people, you know. It's either go to Kickstarter or just kiss your ass goodbye because Steam Greenlight just screwed everything up. Remember, they had to started adding $100 charges because people would be doing fictional games that were never going to be released in Steam Greenlight, you know?
Yeah.
And it's part of Valve's ongoing issue is lack of... They just leave this service alone, and that's it. I think all they care about is if anybody's trying to defraud them. And even then, it takes them a while to react. Go ahead, Scott. I know you want to say something.
I think it's Gabe Newell is his name, right?
Gabe Newell. He seemed
to have he had a very quick reaction when they did that mods for sale, or you know, buying mods, and people didn't like that, or you know, and he reacted quickly to that. So I wonder why he doesn't get more involved with cleaning up his store and getting crapware out, because it's like, yeah, you don't want to drown good games in all this crappy content, and I guess the user base isn't doing its job to clean that stuff out, so you need to hire some people that can clear this crap out.
Put my finger right on the pulse of why that he doesn't do that.
Because that would cost them money. Why?
Yeah, to go through the thousands of games that are... No, millions of games now that are put up every year and try to determine with quality control what is crap and what is actually worthwhile would take so many man hours, and I don't think that he's willing to dish out that kind of cash.
And you know what? So long as people are buying the AAA games that are $60, he doesn't care, because here's the thing. If you buy a shovelware piece of crap game, Valve still takes their cut. They still get money for that.
Well, there's God Galaxy. They don't seem to be drowning in crapware. They mainly focus on.
I think Steam has something like 10,000 games, and 4,000 of them were in the last year. And here's the thing. Microsoft has very strict quality control on their online service for a reason. You know, so does Sony. You know, I mean, Nintendo had their Nintendo Seal of Quality, but all that meant was they were willing to pay them a license fee. But even then, that's actually good, because if people are willing to spend the exorbitant license fee, then they can afford to make a game, you know. So at least you have that quality control. Even if the game is crap, at least you know it's completed crap. That isn't rushed. Because they have to.
And you have to remember that GOG only just started doing something like Steam Greenlight in the past year, I think. And from the get-go, they did it with the understanding that they were going to handpick games that they knew were going to be something that would come to fruition, that they knew were going to be worthwhile. Never had that kind of curation from the get-go with Steam Greenlight.
Here's the thing. You know that they're going to, you also have Green Man Gaming. You have Gamersgate. What an unfortunate thing for Gamersgate. I keep thinking of this. You know, poor guys. Their name is one letter off a horrendous troll squad. Mm-hmm. Oh, I want to buy this from Gamersgate. You talk to those people. Not Gamergate. Gamersgate. I have about 100 games on Gamersgate because Paradox Interactive sends me all their mid-tier games, and I just haven't looked at them. So, yeah, all these things, you know, they have a limited thing, but at least they have quality control. Valve, no. Valve has gotten fat and unwieldy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they're not going to change. I mean, they are lazy. They are very lazy. So we're going to talk back to Nintendo and how lazy they are about their online service. At least they now have accounts and not friend codes.
Mm-hmm.
Because Lord knows you have to save your children from the predators online who are going to be playing Splatoon or something. they couldn't create an account the normal way. You know, it's like, what? Huh? Now, one of the more severe things is storage is really limited. So it's going to have 32 gigabytes on the system for storage alone. Not counting the amount that's going to be for the OS, you know, whatever OS they're going to be running. They announced that Zelda is going to be 15 gigabytes. Think about it a second. If you install
13,
I'm not sure which, but it's going to be almost half of your memory if you install it. And here's the thing: if you want to get a 64 gigabyte micro SD card, okay, that's an additional $40 if you want to get a 200. They at least they're sort of thinking forward in that it'll be able to accept 2 terabyte mini micro SDs, which don't exist yet. But still, you're forcing people to pay. If they want to get a 200 gigabyte micro SD, that's $125 added to your system cost.
Mm-hmm.
Hidden costs, you know. You know,
this does feel like the toy maker. The toy maker releases a doll and then says, oh, but if you want her dresses and her little hats and other stuff, that's extra. You know, it's like, oh, it really feels like they're sticking it to the customer and they don't seem to care.
It sort of tells them what kind of content games are going to be selling on their stores. Games that are a couple of kilobytes. Those ROMs, the NES ROMs, the SNES ROMs, they just take a couple of kilobytes. That's it. You know, so if you wanted, Skyrim is 9 gigabytes, if I remember correctly, from on PC, you know. And the thing about online play, too, is that you're going to limit all your releases. If you're going to have a very, you know, if you're not going to sell many Switches, there aren't going to be a lot of people online to begin with.
Yeah, that's very true. I don't know if this is going to be better than the Wii U, but it does seem like they're going to be in for some troubled times there with limited consoles, because they're going to pull the same thing again, and then they have like only a few games. I think it's just Zelda and one other. I don't think anybody's going to buy that Switch.
Here's the thing. As much as we're bashing it, it's still a vast improvement on the Wii U, which is disappointing with how Nintendo's handling this. When the Switch was first announced, and they first showed some of those videos, people got excited. They said, yeah, I'd like to play that. Yeah. You know, the controller looks great. I mean, Nintendo sucks with controllers, but at least it looks like it'll work. You know? I mean,
yeah, I don't think I like this little side controller thing. I don't know if that was the Joy-Con or what name they gave it.
So here's the thing, the Joy-Con, so it splits up into two, so you have two little controllers, right? The unfortunate is the right controller has the thumbstick in the middle of the controller, which is going to be awkward.
Yeah, it's not it's not symmetrical, and it's not, it's all messed up.
But here's at least it's an improvement, you know? It's everything about the Switch, the information that first came out, sounds like it's going to be an improvement, you know? And it also shows where Nintendo is thinking, is that they want the hybrid control. If they had a lot of games for the Switch, I guarantee you they would stop production on the 3DS. This was intended as a sequel to both the Wii U and the 3DS. But since they're not going to have any software, they're going to have to hold on to the 3DS a little bit longer.
Yeah.
I mean, Scott, what was your first impression when you first saw the Switch?
I thought it was okay. I just wanted to wait and see what was more, but I liked when the two controllers come together and the tablet looked okay. But you know, it's just, this is not going to be a buy at launch for me at all. I don't think I've ever really bought a console at launch.
Well, I asked the wrong question. Before you even saw what the Switch was going to be, when you first saw Zelda and the soft announce of the Switch, right? What did you think?
Zelda looked good. I mean, I wanted to play Zelda. I still do, but it's going to just have to wait. But I did want to play it when I saw it, yes.
I have some good news for you. It's going to be released for the Wii U, too.
But I'd have to go and buy a Wii U.
Yeah, you can get one used for $30, I think, now. I don't think you'll have a hard time finding a Wii U on the shelf. How about you, TJ? I mean, what was your emotions about the Switch? How did they evolve from the first announcement, you know, the first official announcement of it, to Zelda, to the official, to the videos, not before the actual reveal?
I think these guys are doing a lot of interesting things that look promising, but I think they're doing just as many silly things, and it sort of left me conflicted.
Before you got more of the hard data, I just mean the.
I'm still interested. Not in a launch day purchase, but definitely in a summer purchase when I don't have much else going on, and I might be interested in playing some Nintendo games.
But here's the problem. Here's the thing. If everybody says, well, I'm going to wait, no one's going to buy it. And it may strangle itself on the vine from all the bad decisions.
I bet you that with Zelda launching with it, they'll be able to sell that initial stock out.
Yeah, it won't be too hard, judging by they're talking about how there's going to be limited supply. That's the entire point, isn't it? Even if no one buys it, at least they can say, well, it's sold out. Yeah, but you put 200,000 units, it was sold out.
Yeah, and that is one thing. Is like, I guess if you limit the stock, then when you don't have any stock left over, then that's sort of a win. I do not understand their limited release business model. I've already said that. I'll never understand it. But I'm still interested. Just not in day one purchase, because that's too limited a library to keep me interested for 3 months.
What, two games? You sure?
Yeah.
Well, one game he wants to get, the other one probably not, so it's, yeah, very limited.
Wait, are you not entranced by Skylanders?
I haven't played that at all.
Or Raving Rabbit?
Skylanders. I have Skylanders for the PS4.
I don't think I want to see Raving Rabbits ever again.
I mean, of all the things that are a problem with the Switch, the storage to me is the most baffling and annoying.
The storage, yeah, the storage that comes with it is stupid, but with the way that SD cards are evolving and the prices lowering, that's not too much of a hassle compared to everything else that we've talked about here. The subscription thing is really the thing that gets me the most. It's like, you guys
I'm not going to be subscribing, so I don't have to worry about that crap. So it's not a big deal to me.
I don't like the subscribing, and I also don't really understand the limiting the hardware, the hard drive space, because it's so cheap now to get like really big hard drives, and Apple does the same thing where, you know, you get like a
isn't that what you could do with the Wii U and have an external hard drive? I'm pretty sure they allowed you to do that, but they don't allow you to do that with the Switch.
Yeah, I don't know.
But I mean, it surely it wouldn't have cost them that much more to have put like at least a 500 gig little SD in there. I don't know.
I will say that I think Nintendo's ahead of the curve again, just like the Virtual Boy. You know, it's like they're trying something that isn't going to be available for another 20 years, because I'm willing to bet you that the Switch is going to be a lot like what consoles are going to be in the year 2030.
Yeah, I mean, the concept of what the Switch is offering is still cool to me, and it probably will be up until I can prove to myself otherwise that this was a bad idea. But up until the point where I probably won't have an answer for whether this was worth it or not until 2018, because there's just so much that I can see that could go right for this. There's an equal amount of things I could see that could go wrong, because we've seen it before. And
the problem is that the limited library probably hurts it the most of all. Not including me. I mean, there are going to be people who are going to just go into Zelda, you know, for 3 months and just delve themselves into that world, because it's that sort of world. It's not like No Man's Sky. There's actually a there, you know. But, I mean, look at you
and
Skyrim.
It's supposed to be bigger than Skyrim.
Well, that's just it. You know, look at Skyrim. I mean, people still go through that area. Of course, with Skyrim, you have mods, but still. But you can't sell a system with just... I don't know. What do you guys think out there in podcast land? Are you going to buy a Switch? Are you interested in a Switch in the first place? Because I am not. I already have a console, and I'm a PC gamer for the most part. You know? So I got a console that'll play most of the games I want to play. The games that I don't care about are stuff like Uncharted. I don't really care about Zelda. You know, those are not my games. My games are Halo, Gears of War, etc., etc. It's not console bias. It's just the games that I like, you know. And if you're really into Zelda, here's the thing. If I saw Switch on the shelf, I would probably buy it. Not because I wanted to use it, but just to sell it again, you know, or find someone who actually wanted it and was curious about it. I don't know. If I was rich, I would buy it, then sell it at one quarter off with Zelda to somebody, or give it to as a gift to Scott or something.
That'd be nice. I would definitely appreciate that.
I sent you that tourney pin, now didn't I?
Mm-hmm. That was cool. Very cool.
Do you still wear the tourney pin, or is it part of your suit?
I have it with some other pins on my bag.
Oh, okay.
On my bag of holding.
Cool. Scott, TJ?
Yeah?
Any last words about this? Because we're wrapping this up.
Like I said, it will be my it will eventually be my Zelda and Mario playing machine. I don't really need it for anything past that, I guess. If it does that well, then that's really all I need it for. And if
isn't
it
that
can
Nintendo's
do...
problem though, that it's not much beyond Mario and Zelda. I mean, you didn't even say Metroid, you know, or Castlevania.
Well, I can't say any of those yet because I don't know if they're coming.
Castlevania's Konami, though. Castlevania's Konami, not Nintendo.
So. Exactly, that's my point. It's so...
But here's the thing. Let's compare this to a disastrous launch. Well, we consider a disastrous launch, and that's the Xbox One. You know, it didn't sell like Microsoft wanted. You know, and they knew it was going to take a hit, one thing being expensive, but also because of all the bad press and all that stuff they made. But here's what Microsoft did. They listened. That always on thing, it was taken out. They knew it was going to be a disaster. They realized it was going to be a disaster. And what did they do after the Xbox One was launched? They started doing things that were for the customer. You know, backwards compatibility. That's something they wanted. You know, that sort of stuff. Have you ever seen Nintendo do that?
No.
Have you ever seen Nintendo say, "Oh, we made a mistake. We're going to change our minds and change something"? No. I have never seen them do that, ever. They are that arrogant.
Mm-hmm. I think it's going to be a make-or-breaker year for Nintendo Switch. I think after we see what happens this year, we're going to kind of have an idea of if Nintendo can turn their ship around or if they're sunk.
Well, here's the thing. Because it all depends on what their second shipment is going to be. We know that the first shipment is going to be sold out. Every single first shipment of a console always sells out, including the Xbox One. Well, not the PS3, actually. That's the one exception I can think of. But they do sell out. It's what happens when they send the second shipment out, if that stays on the store shelves or if it comes off the shelves. You know?
It also depends on if they can keep delivering little surprises like that region lock thing was a pretty good thing. I relish the idea of being able to play just like if they don't feel like releasing Dragon Quest in America, then I can just buy it off eBay and play it on my Nintendo Switch anyways. That's something that is a nice surprise to me, and if those things continue to happen, it'll help change my mind, and I'm sure other people's as well.
Yeah, but you need software to enjoy it with it, though. That's the problem. You know, the funny thing is that the GameCube is actually more powerful than the Xbox and the PS2. But it didn't have games, which is why it didn't dominate.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Scott.
I don't have anything else to add.
That's sad. That's sad. Not on your part, but on Nintendo's part.
You know, yeah, like, I mean, I really wanted to be excited for this, but this is just not, it's not enticing me at all. I don't feel tempted. I mean, it's like, I look at it and I see, oh, Zelda would be fun to play, and Mario, and then what? You know, and then it's like that old Sega commercial where they show the long library of Sega games, or Genesis games, and then they showed a very short library of SNES games. Of course, now there's a big library of SNES games, but at the time, it was very small. So, and that included third-party games. There was a lot. You hear me complaining about Castlevania, and you're like, well, that's Konami. But that's my point. It used to be on Nintendo. And to me, Konami was Nintendo. To me, back then, it was. And seeing it not on there just feels so weird. And it's like, what are you doing, Nintendo? And they just keep going down the wrong path, or at least not the path that I want to buy their console on. You know, and it just makes me sad.
I think that's the biggest problem right now, though, ever since the Wii. You know, Nintendo has given the middle finger to their core audience. You know, it's like, yep. We don't care about you. We care about these other people. Oh, those other people are gone. You know, it's like, what? Here's the thing. The Switch did feel like a nod towards a hardcore gamer, a Nintendo gamer, right? It still seems to me like a nod. You know, this is the sort of thing, they're doing the sort of thing that the core Nintendo gamer would want. You know, let's ignore the price, let's ignore the storage, let's ignore the online, let's just talk about Zelda and maybe Mario and all that stuff. All this stuff, this is what Nintendo fans want, you know? They want this sleek system, and it is a pretty system, and it does look good. And, you know, while the detachable controller is odd, I mean, you could think, well, you know what? If the second Joy-Con, a second set of Joy-Cons was cheap, like $50, you know, that's fine. You know, $60 is how much you normally buy for a wireless controller. Maybe $50, $60, that's fine, you know, because they come off, well, these little joysticks would be good for little kids, you know, so you have your kids there, you know, you can just pop them off and play with your kids and all that stuff. But when you want to play with the adults, you snap them on, you have the second pair, you play together, you know, and you have Zelda, and you have Mario, and then you'll have Splatoon 2. All of this, on paper, sounds great. This is exactly what Nintendo fans have been begging for. Then Nintendo shits the bed and says, oh, by the way, this is the price. You have to pay this much for extra controllers. This is how much memory there's going to be. Oh, online? Well, you get a ROM a month, and it's what we pick, and it's you can only have it for a month, and then you have to buy it. And you have to buy the same crap that you bought on the same previous things. Oh, and this and that, you know, all that stuff. And all the good Nintendo stuff that the fans wanted, Nintendo then shits in the face of. It's like, what are you doing? It's like you made this wonderful cake, and you're using shit as the frosting, you know? But the Nintendo gamers want that cake. They want the cake. Let me put it this way. $299 for a Switch, fine. If it is a good system, has decent memory, you know, and all that stuff, you know, people complain about buying extra controllers. Well, fine. You know, you have to buy extra controllers on your Xbox One and PS4 anyway, you know? Fine. Okay, whatever. The memory is more of an issue. Because you need to be able, you know, if they want to get, if you, here's the thing. I would rather, if I had space on my Xbox One, get a digital copy of my game, even though I, quote unquote, don't own it, you know, but it would still, I don't have to worry about a disc, you know. I'm pretty sure you'd rather play Zelda, I'm making an assumption here, off the hard drive, so that, you know, you don't have to worry about having a disc in there, and all that stuff, you know.
There is no disc, there's that little cartridge. It's not right. Even a disc anymore.
Well, you know what I meant, though. It's a cart now. Yeah, it's an SD card, right. So, it's just that, you know, Nintendo got it right on the first half, and then they completely and utterly blundered on the second half. I think that's the problem here.
If they had a universal virtual console where whatever console I had, Wii U, Wii, 3DS...
That's not going to happen.
And I bought, like, Super Mario 3, and I could play that on any of the consoles they had, as long as it was linked to my Nintendo account, that would make me happy, but they're not going to do that.
Sony doesn't do that. Why do you think they're going to do it on Nintendo?
I don't know.
I mean, they do that with backwards compatibility on my digital games. If I had a digital game that I owned, I would see it on the games that are waiting to be installed, which is how I found out Shadow Complex was available, because I looked, oh, Shadow Complex is now available on my thing, you know. But no, they want you to pay for the same crap over and over and over and over again, which is why a Netflix-style service is perfect for Nintendo, because they have a huge motherfucking library. They have 20,000 games. A lot of them are bad, but a lot of them are okay. And you know what? I'm going to willing to bet you those okay games are going to be the most popular ones, because, like you say, well, I never got to play it. I might as well try to see this okay game, which I wasn't going to pay for when back in 1995, but you know what? Let me try it now and see what it was like.
It wasn't so much wasn't going to pay for it back in 95, more like I didn't even know it existed, or they didn't even import it over here in 1995.
Well, even so, and I'm just talking about the okay games that you weren't going to spend $80 for in 1995 money. Now you can play it and see if it was worth it, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, forget the games you didn't know about. Let's talk about the games you knew about, but I'm not gonna buy it because it's too expensive, and I'm playing this other thing. Those are the games I play. That I would rather play. The games that I knew about, I was curious about, but I wasn't gonna pay for. Even the bad games. Maybe play the Back to the Future just to see how much of a crap game it was.
Well, usually I would rent that Blockbuster to play those games. Or
Netflix. Netflix gaming.
Yeah, like Nintendo. You said, yeah. That would work. Yeah.
I mean, that is also essentially sort of what PS Now is, but...
Yeah, they charge too much, yeah.
Yeah, they do charge too much. I would do PS Now in a heartbeat if it was just a part of my PS Plus subscription.
Oh, yeah. I mean, but... look at Marvel Comics. You do that Marvel subscription, you can buy it. You can read any comic from Marvel ever. Ever.
I mean, if you're telling me that I could just go in and find ActRaiser, which is a hard game to find anyways, and just play it, that would be awesome.
The ROMs exist somewhere. I mean, yeah, the cassette itself may be rare, but you know what? The code's still there.
Yeah, and you're right. I could just if I could just go and download the ROM off an emulation site immediately within 5 minutes, which I'm not going to say I will, but I will say that I will say that I can. I know how.
Yeah,
same here.
What are you going to do to make it more convenient for me to do your model instead of just going out and doing my own?
I mean, people already overpay for the Nintendo ROMs with the mini NES. Some of those games I wouldn't pay a buck for. I would not pay a buck for. They average out at $5 each on the mini NES. I wouldn't pay a buck for some of those games. The balloon game? No. I would not. I'm not going to pay for Atari games either, by the way. I mean, why would I want to pay to play Adventure again? It's pay to play Adventure, combat. I loved it, but you know what? That was then. This is now.
Yeah. I would like to play Warlords with someone. That was a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Warlords is fine. It's 4-player breakout. You know, I loved Yar's Revenge. I might pay a buck for that. You know?
Well, you just wait for one of those Steam sales when they put the library on for like $5 or something.
Oh, no, it's the Atari 2600 version, not the remake they had. Oh, although they did remake Warlords, by the way. They did remake that. You can buy the remade version of Warlords. So, anyways.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. like I said, you already have our opinion about the Switch, and we're not exactly keen on it, which is basically par for the course right now. I mean, Nintendo's stock dropped because of the Switch announcement. I said, ew, no. And one of my fears is it's going to be one of those cheap plastic toys that you play with for a couple of months, then you forget all about. You know, it just has that feel sometimes. Not even the Nintendo Glove, but more like one of those handhelds. You know, it's just like, eh, okay, fine. And then you find it in your drawer one day. Oh, I remember having this. It just feels cheap, you know, for a $300 system. And here's the thing. If the Switch fails, I'm hoping it's an object lesson for Nintendo so they can actually ask the people who know what they're doing to help them make a system that people want. You know, the Switch 2.0. That's the best thing about video games, by the way. Sequels are almost always better than their things. Unlike movies, where sequels are, you know, every succeeding thing, the quality goes down and down and down. Video games, it goes up and up and up and up and up. So if there's a Switch 2.0 in, say, 2020, you know, hopefully Nintendo will have learned its lessons and actually done something that... here's a little hint for Nintendo. The number of gamers in Japan no longer are equal to the number of gamers everywhere else. Mm-hmm. Video games in the late 80s, 90s were a niche market. You know, very niche market, because you had nerds play. Only nerds play with video games, man. You're either going to play, well, you're going to play Pac-Man on your thing. Oh, that's. Now you have college jocks playing Madden in their dorm rooms now. That's how it's changed. But, you know, a lot more people play video games, and, you know, you have to. It's what's happening with our movies right now in China, you know. You think it's a coincidence you have that Chinese character in Star Wars Rogue One? You think it's really a coincidence that they have a Chinese character? No. They want, you know, they have that other market. Billion of people going to see that movie. That's why Transformers movies keep on coming out, because the Chinese like it. You know, billion people, they're going to love it. Well, here's the thing. The rest of the world, you know, isn't Japan, and they have to... Nintendo has to have... The other thing about Nintendo is that the old guard has too much say over the innovators in their the young innovators. They say no a lot to the young innovators, and that, you know, like Kirk said to Scotty in the end of Star Trek IV, you know, what's it called, young minds, fresh ideas, you know? I don't know.
Yeah.
It's just... Well, hey, look, let's end it on a positive note. You know, we're finally going to have a good Zelda game. Or at least It's shaping up to be a good one.
It does look really good, yes. I mean, that I definitely agree on. It looks like a fun game, and I'm very interested in playing it. I just don't know when I will be playing it.
You know,
also,
Start from the top. Really. Yeah, I'm sorry. Start from the top, TJ. Sorry.
Okay. And yeah, if you on a positive note, I'll go ahead and plug this, because this will be out by the time that we've posted this podcast. I have an article on the way, and it's something I've been observing in the new Zelda game for a while now, since they very first announced it at E3. There's a lot of similarities between that game and elements from Witcher 3 and Skyrim, and I went deep in there and called out those sort of comparisons.
Gasp.
It's interesting.
Gasp. Really? You just noticed that now?
Well, I mean, I went deep into it and pulled the exact notes, pulled the exact things that I saw. They're like, it's interesting to think that Zelda was the original open world action RPG game. And on this particular occasion, it may be that Zelda is, in fact, instead of being the innovator, looking to its contemporaries in order to freshen up the series.
But you see, here's the thing. I don't like the idea of people saying, oh, it's a ripoff. No, here's the thing. If they do it better or they do it well, it's not a ripoff, because they're doing it better and they're doing it well.
Right. There are some differences, because, I mean, apparently Link starts waking up from, I guess, a hibernation chamber or something like that, and that's definitely not what happens in Witcher or Skyrim.
Well, no, like, I'm not saying it's the same piece for piece. I'm just saying that there are some distinct aspects.
Well,
that
Link
if
is,
you look at
Link is required to wake up at the beginning of all his games. Don't you know this? Come on.
Uh-huh.
He wakes up in the beginning of every single game. Of course he's going to wake up at the beginning of this. I would like to see him wake up with that shopkeeper who clearly has a hots for him, but, you know. I think it's incompatible orientation.
That might have been Zelda 1.
No, it was Zelda 2.
Well,
wasn't
he walks in and the guy gives him the sword. It's like, here.
Right.
No, shopkeeper, the busty one who hits on him, who wants to have sex with Link. It's true. She wants to have sex with him. It's not even coded for kids. She all but exposes her tits for him. It's true. But Link isn't interested, which makes me think, you know, incompatible orientation, and, you know, not that that's bad. But to explain why he and Zelda are never together. They're never shack up. Well, not on the cartoon.
He was an asexual character anyways. it wasn't about getting the princess. It was about stopping evil when that was Ganon.
Or, I think him or and Ganon Majora are going to be an item.
I was one of the people that actually thought that my main character's name was Zelda up until way into the game.
That's a comment. No, I always knew it was Link. I just wonder why they called it the Legend of Zelda. What legend does she have? She's a princess, okay. Does that make her a legend? There are plenty of princesses. They're not all legends. Except for Persis Kabata, now she was a legend.
All right. In any case, I'm not saying it's a piece-for-piece copy. I'm saying it is interesting to see that Zelda, for once, might be looking to its contemporaries in order to freshen up its own feel.
Yeah, I'd be interested to read that.
That'll be on Arcade Sushi by the time that this podcast drops, so if you want to have a look, feel free.
I'm willing to bet that that's the fact that why Scott is really interested in it, because he loves Skyrim, and he's looking at Zelda, and he says, oh, this reminds me of Skyrim. You know, they have the same exploration as Skyrim. No, I'm serious. You have the same exploration as Skyrim. You have this open world to go walk through. You know, it's a pretty world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even with the resolution, it's a pretty world. You know, and it's like, as Zelda, you never really got to explore in this way. I mean, yeah, Wind Waker and all that crap, but, you know, it wasn't exploration. It was more like, you have to go here, then here, then here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now you're looking over the horizon to see, what do I want to go over that horizon and see? What can I find?
That does sound like fun, and I think that game, I mean, yeah, Zelda would take many hours, months to play, I think. You could easily lose a lot of time into it.
Yeah, I could just pick Scott looking for the secrets in that game. Because, you know, it's a Zelda game, there has to be secrets.
I have to collect all the damn heart pieces. They're always really well hidden.
Do they follow the fairies, the little fairies that follow you around? Do they still have those?
Probably still have the jars and Hookshot. You gotta have Hookshot.
Okay, what were you about to say, TJ?
I was gonna say, I haven't seen a Hookshot or jars or anything, but you do, you can cut, like, grass down, and instead of rupees or hearts, you'll find sometimes insects, and you collect them, and you can take a whole bunch of stuff and throw it into a cooking pot and either make garbage and eat it for one heart, or you can make actual, like, potions.
I'm willing to bet you that Zelda does have crafting system. Yeah, I'm willing to bet you Zelda has crafting. I mean, that one thing, everybody has it now, even if it doesn't belong.
It does.
I'm just saying, I'm just saying, yeah.
And that's one of the things I went over in depth in my article.
You know what would be nice? I know it would be Scott's dream if they combined Zelda and Minecraft. Well, not the blockiness of Minecraft, but the sort of create your own stuff in the middle of Zelda sort of world Minecrafting.
That's cool. Like, Zelda says, hey, Link, I need you to rebuild temples for me or something. And he goes out and collects resources and starts rebuilding and guiding villagers to safety and making new towns and whatnot. It sounds like a perfect addition to this game.
Or better yet, you know, you build at night, you always have these massive creatures that will attack, so you have to build a house where you can, you know, get yourself inside so that you can defend against these monsters who want to kill you at night, you know, sort of like you have to have that sort of thing. And then, you know, you can dig deep underneath and get mines, and you can find the jewels and all that stuff, and you craft things. You know, in Minecraft, but not as deep, you know, because I know in Minecraft you can have these conveyor belts. You people in Minecraft, creating games from it. You know, I'm going to create a Minecraft cell phone that really works. They did that. They did that. I covered that. They made a cell phone that was an active cell phone that worked in Minecraft. It was bizarre.
Yeah. At the very least, that exists in one way, though. It's Dragon Quest Builders.
Yes, that's one reason why I want to play that game.
You know, here's the thing, is that I don't think they have it, but imagine if they had co-op Zelda in that world.
Oh, I would love that. Like, Zelda and Link go out adventuring? I would buy that. If they, you know what? In fact, if Nintendo said tomorrow, guess what, you can play with Zelda and Link, I would buy the Switch.
Well, that would be
I'm buying it.
That would be a reason.
That would do it for me.
That would be a reason for a friend to get it, and then you go play it, you know, on the bus or something for the 2 hours that you have for it.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, you know. So, anyways, that's been this. I screwed that up, didn't I? So, I'm not going to do the boilerplate because I forgot to copy it, and that's okay. You can find us at iTunes. You can find us running around there. Actually, you know what? That's cheating. This is going to be hell to edit, but I'm just going to have to do it. I just have to open up a different different podcast notes. So, okay. So anyways, look for our show notes at GamingPodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history articles. Enjoy feedback, so leave us comments at our blog at GamingPodcast.net. Also, hit us up at Facebook.com/GamingPodcast. Subscribe to us on iTunes and leave some iTunes comments. I am at Jonah Falcon.
I am at Johnny Chugs.
And I am at Alpha Shard.
And we will see you next week. And, you know, I'm pretty sure we'll have more to talk about with Zelda. Not Zelda. I mean, the Nintendo Switch, as more information comes out. I mean, there's other stuff that we could have talked about. But we spent the entire hour and a half talking about the Switch because we didn't get to talk about it last week.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if our disgust would have been more or less a week, a couple of days after the presentation.
I don't know.
I think we had a good discussion.
Yeah. We had time to soak it in and think about it.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, on Nintendo's part. Like I said, you know what? If I see a Switch on the shelf, I will pick it up. But it won't be for me. It'll be for someone else, whoever they may be. Okay, we will see you next week.
Happy gaming, everyone.
Take care, y'all.